Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, it's the mother of all episodes. A special guest, Jane Marie, joins Tien Tran and Grace Parra in studio to discuss moms, what they've gone through to bring us into the world, and what they've taught us. Then, the ever-electable Alyssa Mastromonaco also joins to discuss this week's news, from new maternal mortality legislation to what's happening in Georgia. And finally, a very special Hysteria Moms edition of The Hills We'll Die On. Hey, listeners, before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping today. I guess my housekeeping list keeps getting longer. Today's housekeeping, if you want to submit A Hill You'll Die On, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. That's also the email address where we receive all of our emails. So if you want to get in touch for any reason, you can reach out that way. But again, I'm not the only one who checks it. Caroline also checks it. So love notes and hate mail should go to our personal email accounts or just throw them directly into the trash. Second, merch is in the works and I'm biased, but it is really great and I can't wait for you guys to see it. Next, I'm trying a new thing where I give a shout out to a special group of listeners. I'm actually giving a commencement address on Saturday in Maryland, which I'm very nervous about and excited about, but it made me think about how many people are about to graduate this week and in the next couple of weeks. And so I want to give a shout out to all of our listeners who are graduating or about to graduate or finishing a phase in their education. Thank you for listening. Finally, one announcement. Alyssa Mastromonaco, America's soulmate, is participating in a Spelling Bee fundraiser to benefit headcount.org, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan voter registration group whose funds go to get out the vote, issue education, registering voters, enabling direct participation in democracy, staging specific advocacy campaigns, and promoting sustainable living. We're going to put a link to Alyssa's fundraiser for headcount.org in the show notes this week. So if you want to support Alyssa, that's headcount.org. And let's get to the show.
Hello.
Alyssa.
Hello, Erin.
You're sounding mighty electable this morning.
You know what? I'm feeling electable. I took a shower. I washed my hair.
You washed your hair?
I know. It's been a week.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I went a week without washing my hair one time when I was like on a hike. And I could smell my own hair as I was just going about my day, and it was not a pleasant experience. So
you must not have the dry locks that I have, which can go a solid 5 days without a wash.
Wow. Congratulations on that. Also, Alyssa, did you see that Harry and Meghan released the name of their baby son, their tiny baby prince?
Do you mean Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor, the best royal baby name of all time?
It is a pretty good royal baby name because, like I tweeted, it's the kind of name you give your kid when you're like, he's never going to have to get a job, you know?
Never going to have a job, but doesn't worry about having to make friends.
Exactly. People are always going to want to be that kid's friend. That's a flex. Naming your kid Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor.
Windsor, I know. I mean, you know, I was hoping for a girl that would be named Diana, but this is a good second.
That's fine because that saves Diana for a theoretical future baby for me in my imagination.
You know what? That is so true. And I am here for it as long as I am the godmommy.
Oh, of course. Like,
obviously.
Is there any question? Well, when I said that you sounded electable, I said that you sounded electable because I wanted to talk about electability and the ways that that's been used as a point of discussion in 2020. Basically, Alyssa, you pointed this out to me, that the women who are running for president are actually more electable than the men who are running for president because they have a more winning record.
They've been elected and won.
Yeah, exactly. Kamala Harris has defeated a two-term incumbent when she was the San Francisco DA. Elizabeth Warren she defeated Scott Brown in 2012. She also won in 2018. Amy Klobuchar she cleans up in the state of Minnesota. She won her second term with 65% of the vote in 2012 and 60.3% of the vote in 2018. And her approval rating is high in Minnesota. Kirsten Gillibrand ran in a really red district when she first won. Is that correct?
That is correct, because she was actually my congressperson.
Oh.
That is where I grew up. That is my home district.
New York's 29th.
It was New York 19, and now it's New York 20 because there was redistricting, something like that.
Okay.
And and people were so stoked on her, but yeah, it was not like a foregone conclusion that she even had a chance. Mm-hmm. And she'll say that the only person who thought she was going to win was her mother, but she won and has won over and over again in the great state of New York.
Yeah, I mean, and that's impressive on its face. Tulsi Gabbard, who we sometimes leave out of these conversations, but is definitely in the running. She first ran for office in 2002 for a seat in the Hawaii House of Representatives, and she won that with 64% of the vote. She won election in 2010 to serve on the Honolulu City Council. She also ran for Congress in 2012, winning with 80% of the vote. She's a popular lady in her state of Hawaii.
I mean, aloha and mahalo.
Uh-huh. And she's also very young. When she did all these things when she was very young, not AOC young, but pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you know?
Yeah.
All of them are winners.
Yeah. And so it's strange to me that we continually talk about them not being electable, because people like Beto O'Rourke, I mean, as compelling as he is, has lost elections, very famously lost an election recently. Bernie Sanders lost the Democratic primary. Joe Biden, unsuccessfully ran for president in 1988 and 2008. And
yes,
Alyssa, here's something I was thinking about this week. Do you remember the whole Joe Biden scandal in 1988?
Is this the plagiarism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
I remember. Now, you know, of all things, like, one, there was the plagiarism. Then you have, you know, Beto, who has been in Congress, but then lost to Ted Cruz. Now, look, he did really, really well comparatively in the state of Texas. And you know that my whole theory on Beto has always been that, like, Cruz ran against Trump, which elevated Cruz's profile, and won more Americans. First of all, knew who he was, but second, they also knew he was basically the devil. Mm-hmm. And so then Beto got this platform, right? That like the national media is watching him because he's taking on the devil. And the one thing that Beto has done, probably more, maybe Bernie, you know, if you take people who have done events, right? Mm-hmm. Like their rollout events, he's gotten the biggest crowds. Mm-hmm. You know, next to, you know, Bernie has always sort of gotten big crowds. Kamala had a really great crowd for her announcement. And so the problem is crowds are great, but they're not measures of electability entirely, because I have always found, which many people don't listen to me about, so please give me my moment, is that crowds are about curiosity most of the time. People are interested in what someone has to say. And so, yes, people are interested because they've seen a lot about him over the past year and they want to see what he has to say. But like, I don't know that's like, if that's why he's electable, I'm not really sure that is like an electability thing.
Mm-hmm. I think now in the age when a lot of people gather politically in different spaces that aren't physical spaces, so people gather online to I guess talk with other people who they agree with or to commiserate with people, and it's not always a physical space. So, you know, you can't really tell enthusiasm from crowds, but I think you're absolutely right, Alyssa, that you can tell curiosity. And this isn't to poo-poo the men who are running for president, because
I just think
that this stat is important to bring out when people talk about electability and women. And, you know, the fact of the matter is Elizabeth Warren is attracting huge crowds, and she's attracting a ton of conversation online, and she's surging in the polls, and she's won elections. She has not lost elections.
Right. But the reason it's so important for us to talk about it is because the more people talk about electability, it becomes like, you know, manifest destiny. It's like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that, like, well, if people say they're not electable, then do they become not electable?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. No, we're not going to stand by and let that conversation take hold. We're here to say they're highly electable.
We're putting on our actually pants this morning. We're putting on our actually pants, and we're actually in you. They are actually electable.
My actually pants are sweatpants, but they're still actually pants.
Oh, actually pants can be any kind of pants at all. As long as you say actually when you're wearing them and you're righteously upset about sexism in coverage of the 2020 race. Yes, then anything can be actually pants. So I want to transition. This week's show is going to be about moms and mothers and the way that we, as a country, and the way we as a country treat mothers and the way that mothers have impacted our lives. And so the second part of this news segment today is kind of a tough one, but it's something that we need to talk about. So we can start, I guess, on a positive note. So just this morning, we're recording this on Wednesday morning, Cory Booker and Massachusetts Rep. Ayanna Pressley, our girl, Ayanna, introduced some legislation into the House and Senate to address maternal mortality. The bill is called the Maximizing Outcomes for Moms Through Medicaid Improvement and Enhancement of Services, which spells out mommies, the Mommies Act. And it's supposed to extend the time period that mothers can be covered by Medicaid after they give birth. They currently cannot be covered up to a year, and the bill would allow that to happen. Current Medicaid coverage is just 2 months. So, Alyssa, what do you make of the new bill that Cory Booker and Ayanna Pressley introduced this morning?
I am very into it for the following. So all of the policies that people are coming up with, which we're going to talk about, are really great. But I personally want to see something that can start making a difference like today. And the thing that I love about one of the components of their bill is it promotes community-based doula services to help end these disparities. And so one, doulas are awesome and they help you prepare to give birth and aftercare. But also in this scenario, I think they also act as your advocate. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're saying, I have these cramps, I have this pain, my feet are swollen, you know, what does all this mean? You're not just going to the doctor, waiting in a long line for someone who's probably annoyed that you're there. Well, I don't want to offend doctors, but the system is overtaxed, right? And so instead, you have someone, you know, they're not going to send you home and be like, no, you're fine. Instead, you have this doula who can go with you, who can help advocate for you and make sure that people are hearing you and taking care of what is bothering you. And so, or, you know, whatever sort of like medical issue you may have. So I'm like very, very for that. I think that that's a wonderful way that, that this can start making an impact like right now.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that the bill talks about is the huge racial disparity in maternal mortality. I'm just reading some stats right now. The U.S. is one of 13 countries in the world where maternal mortality rates are worse than they were in the 90s. And we have the worst rate of maternal deaths in the entire developed world. And we are the only country where the rate of women who die in childbirth is rising. And a lot of that is due to the fact that Black women experience 40 deaths per 100,000 live births, which is a horrifying statistic. And 60% of pregnancy-related complications are found to be preventable. So the Mommies Act, which Booker and Ayanna Pressley introduced, addresses the fact that a lot of these issues with childbirth and maternal mortality are racial, and that those gaps need to be remedied. So the good thing is that this is not an invisible problem now. I don't know how long it's been an invisible problem, but now it's been dragged into the light and people are talking about it. The presidential candidates are talking about it. Alyssa, do you have a favorite 2020 maternal mortality addressing plan?
So I'm going to be very honest with the people who listen to us. These are very complicated plans. Mm-hmm. You know, like as non-medical experts, I think that, you know, on the face, when I read them, I love that Kamala, like both Kamala, I don't know, both Kamala and Elizabeth have very good, like approaches. Elizabeth's, which I don't know, this is the one that I find sort of the most complicated to understand. How it would be implemented is basically incentivizing hospitals. So like the more you're, to me, this seems also like a very easy, not easy, but an effective and immediate way to sort of start tracking these things is that she wants to incentivize hospitals whose mortality rates go down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yes. So to me, that seems awesome. It seems like people are always incentivized by money. Right. If the hospitals want the money, then they have to start listening to people and making sure that when women are complaining of issues or coming in and don't know what's wrong with them, that they're listening and they are taking action. I mean, it's depressing, but I guess if that's the way, I do think that, you know, money makes things happen. So I feel like that is something that could really have an impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that it seems like the candidates' maternal mortality policies, like Cory Booker, for example, is now involved in the conversation. They're sort of informing each other. I read Elizabeth Warren's op-ed for Essence when she rolled out her maternal mortality plan. Mm-hmm. And in it, she gives a shout out to both Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. Like, she's very generous with the fact. It seems to me that all of the candidates genuinely want to see something done about this. And they're not really precious about the fact that it's their idea versus it's somebody else's idea. The what's important here is actually tackling this healthcare shame in our country and making it better.
Agree. And also, you know, it's like we were talking before, it's like how is this happening in America? Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that the thing for us is, I mean, I did not even know the problem is as bad as it is until a couple weeks ago when they started rolling out these plans. Mm-hmm. And you're like, my God, can this actually be fucking true? And it is. And so that's why it's on all of us to make sure that people know that this is a problem and why these plans, these like very thoughtful, well-crafted plans are important for people to read and understand and see why they're important. And also think about why no one's done this before.
Yeah. And what you mentioned about doulas is really important. There was a really great piece in the New York Times a few months back about how important doulas are to helping Black mothers advocate for themselves in hospitals. And it's a really interesting and important piece as well. One of the things that is really upsetting to me is that most of these, like I mentioned earlier, the CDC said most pregnancy complications are totally preventable. And so the problem is that the medical establishment is not caring for mothers and babies the way that it should, which is super heartbreaking and very dark. But the upside of it is that it sounds like we're doing something about it and that we all need to keep thinking about it and keep caring about it. I wanted to give a quick shout out. So for Mother's Day, I gave a donation to the Black Mamas Matter Alliance, which is a maternal health organization that's a woman-led cross-sectoral alliance. I'm just reading from their website. They center Black mamas to advocate, drive research, build power, and shift culture for Black maternal health rights and justice. The Black Mamas Matter Alliance was founded in cooperation with the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is a great organization, and I trust everything that they do, and I think Black Mamas Matter Alliance is doing great work. So if you would like to check them out, you totally can find them online. We'll give them a link in our show notes. Alyssa, do you have a favorite maternal health organization?
I have a favorite reproductive health organization, Physicians for Reproductive Health. These are trained doctors who use evidence training and organized action to champion your healthcare rights. And also they make sure that, you know, in some parts of the country, these physicians are the only ones that are helping to make sure that in certain parts of states that abortion is still safe and legal. And I have been going to their fundraiser for years and I donate to them. And it's crazy because actually when you go to one of their events, you RSVP and then you don't get the location until a couple days before because it's dangerous for them to gather in one place. Mm-hmm. And they are making sure that there was one doctor who helped found the organization. He's no longer there, but he was basically the abortion provider and healthcare provider for many women. He was the only one for several hundred miles down south. Wow. And so they take care of ladies soup to nuts, and they are very important. So the Physicians for Reproductive Health.
And one more quick thing I wanted to say. The state of Georgia this week, Alyssa, have you been following this news?
I know. Yes, ma'am.
I know. The state of Georgia this week the governor signed a bill that makes abortion illegal after 6 weeks, which is earlier than when most women find that they are pregnant, which is a trash bill that will immediately be in like face injunction and not go into effect. One thing I wanted to point out to our listeners is a lot of coverage is very hair on fire, which obviously it should be. But the fact of the matter is abortion is still legal in the state of Georgia. So if you live there, do not take matters into your own hands. The law does not take effect until January 2020 if it does go into effect. So that's an important thing to remember.
That is a very important thing to remember. But also that these legislatures are doing this because not because they think that it's going to become legal in their state anytime soon. What they're trying to implement will be law anytime soon. But it's because they want these cases to be challenged so that they go to the Supreme Court, because unlike Susan Collins, these people think they do know where Brett Kavanaugh stands. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it is also important to keep your eyes on everyone running from election from now until 2020 to make sure that they're on the right side of Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm, because it is more fragile now than it has ever been. So, Alyssa, I guess give your mom a hug this Mother's Day.
I will. I'm seeing her on Saturday.
Oh, you are. That's great. Give her a super tight hug. And I'm looking forward to talking to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
We have to take a break, but when we come back, more hysteria.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back to More Hysteria. This is a very, very special episode. All the episodes are special, but this one is very special because we're talking about mothers, our own mothers, why people decide to be mothers, the way mothers are depicted in pop culture. And I've got a kick-ass group of women here today to talk with us about that. First up, we have actor and activist Grace Parra. Kissing into the
blowing kiss. I don't know why I decided to do that.
I think audio wise, it's questionable.
Yeah,
but
it is, right?
We'll see.
How's that going to play?
We'll see. You know, you got to try things.
Got to mix it up on Hysteria.
What are you doing for Mother's Day?
I am, surprise, surprise, having people over and cooking. I don't know what I'm cooking yet.
I was going to say, what's the traditional Mother's Day meat?
I don't know. My boyfriend's mom is coming over, but his sister's vegan. So there's a lot of, I gotta cook a lot of vegan these days, which I don't hate, mm-hmm. But it just requires some thought.
You have to get really familiar with like coconut milk and
Correct.
Its possibilities. And you can really do a ton of stuff with coconut milk.
I'm going to try cauliflower steaks tonight, which is just cauliflower.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's just slices of cauliflower.
It's just slices of cauliflower. Well, but they fancied up with the word steak.
You can't call that a steak.
I agree completely, by the way. Hill I will die on. The pre-hill that I'll die on is cauliflower steaks are not steaks.
This is your little drumlin. You know, drumlin is like a tiny little hill. I learned that in fourth
grade. Really?
Yeah, we have them in Wisconsin.
In what language?
It's just like a geographical feature.
It sounds Irish.
It's cute.
Drumlin.
Anyway, second up, we have actor and comedian Tien Tran. Hello and welcome.
Pew, 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 pew.
I just wanted to build.
I wanted to build
off of what you were doing.
You yes-ended my kisses.
Could you tell I was doing little guns?
Absolutely. What are your Mother's Day plans?
We actually celebrated Mother's Day last week because all my sisters and we're all together for the first time.
Oh, I saw on Instagram.
Yeah, we were
cute.
My family is all over the place. They live on the East Coast, West Coast. My sister lives in Ireland. So we were all together and we celebrated Mother's Day.
That's nice.
We got my mother a bracelet with the names of all of the grandchildren.
How many grandchildren are there?
There are five of them.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. There was one moment where my sister was like, should we put our names? And I was like, no. Our mom does not want our names on her wrist.
That's cute.
I mean, some moms would, but you know your mom better than I do.
No, when we gave it to her and we were like, we also thought about giving you our names. She goes, No. Why would you do that?
Oh, man. Well, third and not least, a very special guest, the host and producer of The Dream, and somebody I've known for years and years prior to Hysteria, Jane Marie.
Okay, now I feel like I have to do one of those.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great.
That,
a good one?
That was really, really that. Impressive.
I know I told you this off mic, Jane, but... The Dream was so good.
Thank you.
Yes,
our
it was.
Listeners haven't listened to it. It's a multi-episode kind of docu-style podcast about multi-level marketing, and it is so good.
And we have bonus episodes coming out in July.
Yes!
Four extra episodes about MLMs. This fall, the second season comes out.
But there's it's a different season?
Oh, yeah. There's going to be like 100 seasons, hopefully.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I can't
different
wait.
Topic.
Well, you have to come back like right before it comes out
problem.
That you can like tease that out.
Yeah.
What are you doing for Mother's Day?
Nothing. I don't know. My kid's only 5.
Uh-huh. Oh,
so
cute.
She's been talking about it for about a week and a half, but it's just she and I at home. So I don't really... We'll see. I don't know what she has planned. She knows how to make like 2 things.
She knows how to make things? That's
she
impressive.
Can make deviled eggs.
Whoa.
Food.
Oh, yeah. I thought crafts and I was
that's like a million crafts,
okay.
But food wise, yeah, she could, maybe she'll make me some deviled eggs.
Wow.
I have no idea what's going on.
That's
we'll
cute.
Probably just hang out like we always do on Sundays and wear whatever we want.
Oh,
that's what the weekend's for.
Yeah.
So fun. Does she have like a chest of like special clothes mm-hmm. that she pulls out? What's her favorite article of special clothes?
She likes to copy things. So whatever we're watching, like if we're watching a movie or something, then she goes in and like, I'm going to put that outfit together. So there's not like a costume, you know, a Disney thing. The other day she was trying to dress like Amber from Hairspray. And so but it was like a specific scene. I had to pause it. And then she's like running in and out of the room for a half an hour, like getting her necklace exactly right.
It's very savvy.
Yeah. She likes
Man.
Doing.
She is going to have the best wardrobe when she's a teenager.
Yeah.
As soon as she's like able to spend her own money and like pick out her own things, she's going to be like a fashion plate.
She's already got
style.
All of my old stuff. So,
I
save every. Like before I had her, I would take things to Crossroads or whatever to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have like a giant bin of, well, maybe she'll like this.
That's
weird piece that I shouldn't wear after age 29.
I don't have kids, but there's a couple things that I have, like a prom dress, for instance.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like graduation cap, like gown and cap that I guess in some weird recess of my brain, I'm sort of potentially saving.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have like bright yellow palazzo pants. That, like, I'll never put on again, but maybe she'll want them when she's, like, 15.
I think everybody should just go after whatever they mm-hmm. want, but that's...
Combat boots and floral dresses just, like,
always.
Really freaked me out putting it on, honestly.
Oh, no, I think they're a forever thing.
Yeah.
I can totally wear those forever. Well, let's talk about... I guess we're already kind of talking about moms, but I wanted to talk a little bit about just moms more as a concept before we zoom in on our own mothers for a very special Hills Will Die On edition this week. So one thing that I was thinking as I was like kind of prepping the show was the way that moms are depicted, like the way that we grow up reading about moms, watching movies with moms characters in them, etc. And I was thinking about how like all the moms in Disney movies are dead.
Yeah.
And Jane Marie, you had a strong reaction to that. And I just would wonder, I'm wondering what you're thinking about it.
I've researched this.
Okay.
Because it's been something that's bothered me as well. Like, why don't they have moms? Or if they do have a mother, it's an evil stepmother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a few theories out there. My favorite is that you have to kill... Okay, so first of all, the main character in any like children's fantasy or fairy tale or whatever Disney movie is a child, usually, or someone at least a teenager age or younger. And in order for them to grow and develop and get into... to sticky situations and have, you know, to heighten the drama, there can't be a mother character because none of that would be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
If the mom was there, they would keep them safe. That's what a mom mm-hmm. is supposed to do. So mm-hmm. you have to kill the mom right away for the character to develop enough over the course of an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I like that theory.
That's
like,
interesting.
Get rid of her and then the kid can like go, you know, almost fall off of a cliff or whatever the things are, or like take a magic carpet ride or, you know, kiss some inappropriate man or, you know, all of the things that they do in fairy tales.
That hits me so, that's so true because I like the thing that my parents taught priority priority for me was my safety, was protection. In fact, my parents were definitely overprotective. Mm-hmm. I would never have been a kid to have like fancy adventures in any sort of movie because my parents were so concerned with my safety. So right. I think that theory totally holds.
It also is like a diss on dads too, because the dads are just like, I'm busy getting a girlfriend or whatever. Or they're also just like off fighting something.
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe that after reading that article that you sent us, how many of those movies kill those moms off?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kill them off.
Like, the list is outrageous.
Yeah. Here are some dead moms: Chicken Little, Aladdin, The Fox and the Hound, Pocahontas, Beauty and the Beast, The Emperor's New Groove, The Great Mouse Detective, Ratatouille, Barnyard. I have never heard of that movie. Despicable Me, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, and Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Bambi, Snow White,
Bambi, Dumbo. Yeah. Oh, no, Dumbo doesn't. But Dumbo's mom
Sleeping
gets.
Beauty.
Sleeping taken
prisoned,
away.
Imprisoned, right? Yeah.
She gets to, yeah, she goes to prison.
She goes to prison. Circus.
That made
Cinderella.
Me cry like so much when I was pregnant.
Oh, the Dumbo.
I saw like a picture of Dumbo at Disney World when I was pregnant and I was just sobbing.
Dude, like, I saw the billboards for the latest Dumbo remake and I was like, this is triggering me. This is too aggressive.
Yeah. I can't follow. This is how emotional elephant mothers are for me as a result of Dumbo. I can't follow certain hashtags on Instagram because elephant pictures come up and it's like tourists riding elephants, and I'm like, no, I can't. They're sentient beings. They need to be let to be free and roam. They have strong family bonds.
Yes.
Anyway, I get very emotional about it.
Yeah,
I think that's a really interesting theory that the mom's absence allows the kid to act out enough to have an adventure. But I also think what was interesting in the Atlantic article that we all read was that it also gave the man an opportunity to demonstrate what a good guy he is. Mm-hmm. So like the dead mom isn't necessarily about how good a person the mom was. It's about how good a person the dad is. Like, I was thinking about Despicable Me recently. I don't have children, but I do have two little nephews who are straight in the middle of the Despicable Me mm-hmm. demographic. Mm-hmm. And I recently went to Universal Studios with my sister and her husband when they were in town. And we went on the Despicable Me ride and there was a long line. And as we were waiting in line, I asked to have it explained to me. And I was like, what is it? There are so many plot holes or like loops that they have to jump through to make this guy into a good guy. Like all of these girls, there are three dead moms involved in this.
Whoa.
Because there's three girls that the guy like takes
right.
in.
Oh, wow.
And like,
I mean, I've never seen it.
It took three dead ladies to make this guy seem like a good guy.
I liked her theory that like the dead mother makes the mourning father not or something you like empathize and sympathize with, but also makes him like a hot catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to worry about her coming back. Yeah.
Single mom's not so hot. Yeah. Single dad. So.
Widowed single dad.
Oh, yeah.
Super hot daddy.
Yeah. I think that there's something really kind of ridiculous about the way that single parenthood is depicted in culture. Because I'm just looking at some stats here. 67% of U.S. households with kids are headed by married couples. 25% by single mothers and only 8% by single fathers. Mm. So mm-hmm. out of all of the households that have children in them, all but 8% have a mother present.
Yes.
And it feels disproportionate that so much of pop culture is like, and the dad has always been
right,
in charge.
Right.
It seems very silly. Jane Marie, I'm going to ask you a personal question.
Yeah.
As a single mother, do you find it difficult to find, I guess, pop, like movies, books that give your daughter an idea, that show your daughter somebody like you living a life like you and your daughter live together?
You know, I think I take care of that by living my life in front of her. Like,
yeah,
I think I'm setting up, I don't know, whatever example. I mean, I'm just being myself in front of her. But it is really, really impossible to find any pop culture, TV movies to consume that isn't just totally stupid. I think that's an area where I wish I was more relaxed. I'm pretty chill, I think, in a lot of my parenting, but with the TV, she's not allowed to watch Barbie. She's not allowed to watch, because I've seen this stuff. I watched like an episode or two here or there.
Wait, Barbie's a TV show?
Yeah, there's
really?
Like, yeah, you can like stream all this shit on, you know, Amazon or whatever. But there's
dreadful.
A lot of shows that are like really you know, the My Little Ponies are super catty. They're just really bitchy to each other. Mm. Barbie is Barbie, which I collect Barbies, but, you know, that's not not yet. I don't want her to be exposed to that yet. And there's just like, they're just not, I don't know, they're just like so much trash in the world. So yeah. It is hard, but luckily she has really good taste. Mm-hmm. And the movie that, like I said, she's into right now is Hairspray.
That's
and
a
that
great
mother-daughter movie. Yeah. relationship is amazing.
Yeah.
And so I'm really happy that she's found that one.
Have you found that in raising her, you're kind of echoing lessons that your parents taught you, or are there things that you learned that you definitely changed from your parents?
There's a lot that I've changed, I would say. I mean, my parents were very, very young when they had me. They were, like, just barely out of their teens. And I think with my daughter, I'm a little more relaxed than my parents were. They were pretty taskmastery when I was really little. And I just try to, like, let her live a little more with the knowledge that she's, like, actually a really good person. And so I'm not super worried about how she, you know, what she's doing every second. Mm-hmm. But also that, you know, I exposed her to a lot more of the world than my parents did. I think I grew up, like, in a time where, you know, you just didn't talk about sex or, you know, like, those kinds of things were, or Hairspray being a movie by, you know, that has all these themes that are maybe a little more adult. I know that she's not going to pick up on a lot of that stuff. And if she does, they're good lessons. So I think I'm, like, a little more open than my parents were about that.
Mm-hmm. Grace and Tien, for both of you, neither of you have kids, but if you had
that
kids.
That we know of.
Oh, up top.
It's one of those dad jokes I like to throw in during the Mother's Day themed episode.
Who knows how many kids I have
Who
out
knows?
There?
But are there lessons that your parents taught you that, or are there ways that your parents raised you that you're like, definitely doing that? Definitely not doing that.
You know, one thing I was thinking of that my parents were always fiercely supportive of me and very supportive of, and not necessarily in like a snowflakey kind of way, like you're brilliant and perfect. Not quite that. But they definitely, I think, gave me a little bit of like a kind of competitive edge. And I wish that my parents had taught me, hey, if there's somebody in your circle that you think is really awesome and maybe doing better than you or somebody who you admire, you should try to befriend them rather than forming a competitive internal dialogue with them, which is something I've only learned as an adult, that it's actually much better to surround yourself.
Isn't that freeing?
Yeah.
When you're
really
like,
is.
Oh, shoot, I should befriend the people I want to be like. Yes. Instead of hating.
Yes. Yeah. And I think part of that was because I was the only girl. I grew up with three older brothers and they were all competitive with themselves. But within my family circuit, I was really the only girl. So it was always something a little bit special about me. That's something that I've had to break away from.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Not that I think of myself as special, guys. Trust me. I do not.
I mean, Tiana, was there anything that your mother taught you that you are really glad that she taught you?
Yeah, I think my parents, I grew up in a predominantly white suburb. So I got bullied a little bit for being like an Asian kid, for being the Asian kid. And one of the things my parents probably instilled in me the most was like, don't listen to them. Like, just be yourself, be proud of who you are, be proud of your family and be proud of your background and where you came from and where we came from. And that is something that at first I was like, very reluctant to be like, no, I want to be like all the other kids. Like, I don't want to bring Vietnamese food to lunch and be made fun of. And now I really am like very much trying to go back to like embracing the culture, embracing my heritage. And I want, I don't think I'm going to have kids, but to my nieces and nephews, I would love to continue to try and like pass that to them.
Yeah, that's a really great thing to, it's something that's probably hard as a kid to internalize.
Yeah.
To like be proud of the thing that makes you, feels like the reason you get picked on. You know, it's like, well, what, how am I supposed to be proud of this thing? But it's cool that as an adult, you've been able to kind of move on.
Yeah.
Jane Marie, I wanted to go back to something that you said about like the way you were raised and things being kind of sheltered. I think you and I kind of grew up in similar places, like Midwest small town, where it was possible to shelter kids from information. And like, it was possible to just grow up and not have any knowledge of who Millie Vanilli was. You know, it was possible.
Not
to,
for me.
I don't think
my parents
Millie
were so
Vanilli,
young. Yeah. My dad took me to my first rap show when I was like six.
Oh, okay.
So
cool.
My parents really were like cool. Early adopters of
who
stuff.
Was it?
It was the Fresh Fest. It was like a group of people. It was the fat boys and Houdini.
That's so cool.
But my extended family for sure, and like all of our neighbors and everything. It was very small town, you know, really small town. I will say my parents, one thing I really appreciate that they did is they let me own my body from a very young age. There was a time in my teens where it got a little sketchy, but like as far as what I could do with my hair and how I could touch myself or whatever, all of that was like fine. And they were, you know, so I do encourage that with my daughter is like, this is your domain, you know?
Right.
I don't want to get in there. And
Right. That's really interesting. One of the things I was thinking about prepping for the show is like, you know, the knowledge and the awareness that your mother did so much for you. Like as a kid, you're like, I depend on this person feeds me, this person takes me places, this person loves me, this person reads to me, this person supports me. But as an adult, I think I was in my 20s as I slowly started grasping the physical aspects of being a mother. Like, oh, she literally grew me inside of her body. And
so
it's so fucked up.
I can't believe that's still how we make every person on the planet. It's just so bizarre.
I can't believe she let me do that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then you hung off of her.
I know. And then I hung off of her breast, a very sensitive part of her body, for like almost a year.
And then you hung off of her shoulder, and then you hung off of her leg, and it's like having a parasite.
I mean there's a huge physical toll in pregnancy. And Jane Marie, you wrote an essay for Jezebel years ago about the toll that it takes on women, and I was wondering if you would talk about that a little bit.
You mean my vagina?
This is the juicy stuff I want to hear about, by the way.
This will be part of the hill I'll die on. I had a really difficult childbirth, and it kind of wrecked some stuff. Like, I had a lot of tearing and some muscle atrophy stuff going on. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she was trying to come out of my butt, essentially.
What? Is there a term for that?
Wrong way.
I think that's the medical term.
I'm sorry, Jane Marie. Your baby is wrong way.
Wrong direction. And we were just like jiggling her, trying to get her to turn around and go in the right direction. And it took a really long time. And eventually she did. But it was just kind of I wouldn't say it was a disaster, but basically all these things that could go wrong, she's shit in there and just whatever. It was just it was a nightmare. Don't get pregnant. I had to get reparative surgery later on, which was great. I'm really grateful that I'm not like peeing my pants every time I cough at this point. But, you know, I told my dad about my bad birth, like right after it happened. I was like, oh, it was really awful. And he's like, yeah, well, you can't get out of it without giving up something. And I was like, huh? What are you talking about? You can't get out of it. And since then, I've just been like, why can't we make pods? Like, why aren't there pods? Like, it's gross to think about. Like, look around this room. Each one of you was made inside someone else's body.
Yeah.
It's like in water, in their belly for a long time, almost a year. That's gross. That's so gross. It's unfair and gross.
I mean, honestly, you're sounding very Sylvia Plathy right now. I think there's a scene at the beginning of The Bell Jar. Where she like sees her pregnant neighbor walking by and she's like, I honestly don't think pregnancy is like on its face gross. It's just so crazy to me.
It's
like
crazy.
Crazy that it can happen. I think pregnant women are beautiful. I think that my sister and my sister-in-law, when they were both pregnant, they were beautiful and their babies are beautiful. And like, I am pro people choosing to have children. But pregnancy as a concept, when I think about it, it's sort of like the first time it occurred to me that the sun is going to run out of fuel, where it's like, what?
Yeah. There is just nothing else like it. There is nothing else comparable to growing something inside your, like, I guess a tumor. I guess it's either a child. But even a worm is like
you can't like take out the worm and dress it up and take it to the park.
Look, that takes a long time to get to that point. I mean, this worm, when it came out of me, was like not a lot of fun for a very long time. I thought it was going to be fun immediately, but but it's weird because like she used to like get the hiccups inside me.
What
is that time? I know you're saying, like, it's cute, but when you're trying to sleep and someone's inside your body with the hiccups.
At what point were you like, this is a human being inside of me? Initially,
immediately.
It's just like
as soon as I felt her kick for the first time,
it wasn't,
I was just
like,
ew. Like, this is so weird. I mean, it was precious, but it was also just weird. And so I got those I got those headphones where you can like listen to the heartbeat thing. I bought them from China for like $9. And my doctors were really mad because they were like, you can't do that because you'd be self-diagnosing and whatever. Like, don't listen to her heartbeat. But I was like, no, I need to like connect with her a little bit more because this is so creepy. And I want to love her. Yeah. I don't want to be creeped out by her this entire time, but it's creepy. Or like when they hook their toes around your ribs.
Ew, what?
Yeah.
That is a thing?
Yeah. They can get like way up in there.
Oh, it's, man.
It's a person inside your body. I don't know if we've made that clear yet.
My sister, my sister's, I saw her, she was like 2 weeks late giving birth and I saw her,
poor
I know.
Sister.
And I saw her, like I had scheduled a trip home so, with the expectation that the baby would be born and I could visit them and stuff, but she was still like very pregnant. She showed me her belly and he was like, he loved doing somersaults. Like he was just constantly somersaulting in her body. And you could see him moving underneath her like stomach. And you know what's interesting about like pregnancy and childbirth, besides everything, like literally everything is interesting about it, is I think the fact that, you know, I hate to be like we as a country, but we as a country are pretty like awful to pregnant women. Yes. We're pretty awful to new mothers and we're pretty awful to people experiencing postpartum and complete, we display a complete lack of understanding and empathy. And at the same time, a lot of public policy that aims to interfere with sex education prevents people from understanding just how hard being a mother is, being a pregnant person is. And I almost think that like sex education that was comprehensive enough so that men and women, so everybody understands exactly what it is, maybe we'd be a little bit more empathetic in our policy making. Instead of, I feel like there's a lot of men who are in charge who are kind of grossed out by it, though.
Yeah, and they're allowed to be grossed out by it. Men can continue to be as ignorant about the process and as grossed out about the process as they want.
I think they should be shamed for it. They should absolutely be shamed for it.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
if a man cannot label a female reproductive chart with 80% accuracy.
You shouldn't be fucking.
You shouldn't be fucking.
I feel like we focused a lot on that, though, in school, like the biology, like the here's where everything is and here's when you're going to get your period and this is how your penis gets hard or whatever. And then that was it, you know, like, and don't get pregnant.
Yeah.
And then that
yeah.
was the end of the discussion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about, like, what your body really goes
well,
through.
Well, you know what? I grew up going to Catholic school, as I think I mentioned, and we skipped the part about how you got pregnant and just went straight into a class called Christian parenting, which is what happens when you have the child and how you raise that child with good morals or whatever, which still doesn't
After you've been like
magically
secreted away at like some other school for 9 months.
After you've been cloistered. Yeah, exactly. You've been cloistered for 9 months.
We had one of those schools in my town. And
really?
Oh my God, I made best friends with every girl that came into town and lived there because they had open pass, like open campus pass all the time. They could leave campus whenever they wanted because they were pregnant. And they had to go to doctor's appointments and stuff. So as soon as one would show up from like one of the big towns nearby, I would be like, hey,
wait,
what are you doing for lunch?
How many pregnant teens you know? Are we looking at?
There were like 10 or 12 in this house.
Wow.
From like the nearby bigger cities. Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah. It was like a secret, like that's... come and have your baby in secret. And then we adopted out. And then no one has to know that you were ever pregnant. You just went to your grandma's for a year or you did study abroad or whatever.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That I know.
That's absolutely
it's crazy to treat pregnancy as something that anybody can forget.
Yeah.
But there's been so much effort put toward forgetting.
Well, does that come? I'm actually thinking now that like the way that my mom always talked to me about teen pregnancy was like, well, don't ever get pregnant, which is not a problem because it's not like I was having sex. Don't. But if you do, have the baby. We'll just make sure that somebody adopts the baby. If you get pregnant, just have the baby. Mm-hmm. That was like kind of a top down messaging that I received was whatever happens, like, well, you're not going to have an abortion, so just have the baby. And I'm sure that had that happened to me, my parents probably would have sent me to one of those schools.
I think my parents gave us the exact same.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't really even talk about the baby because there wasn't going to be a baby. Like you are not getting pregnant.
Oh,
like, there's
okay.
Just no, that's the end of the discussion.
Interesting.
There's
We never talked. My parents never gave me like a real sex talk or talked about motherhood or babies. My mom only ever said while watching TV, just like very quietly looked at me and was like, I only knew your father. And then just continued watching TV.
I only knew.
By the way, that needs to be the name of your memoir.
I only knew your father.
My parents were very sex positive, but they just didn't like the babies. Like you're just not getting pregnant. And then it kind of backfired on them because I waited really forever to have my baby. And then they're like, I wish you would have done this a long time ago.
Well, she is really, really cute.
Thank you. I was going to show you the picture of what it looked like in the moment I went into labor. This is what she was doing.
Oh my gosh.
You see? She's like leaning.
Over. Who took that photo?
Her dad. My belly is like off to one side. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Wow.
She's like, where's that butt?
that butthole. I think about that, seeing that and just like thinking about our mothers having us and being pregnant. My mom gave birth, my oldest sister, in a refugee camp.
Whoa.
And she casually talks about it in just like, she'll just be like, yeah, they started like giving me a C-section and then walked.
In a refugee camp? C-section?
Yes. And then walked away for a little bit and then came back. And she says it so casually. And then after that experience, continued to
have babies?
Three more children.
No.
Spread out over. We're so spread out. I have two older sisters that are.
Probably took her a while to recover every time.
Yeah. I have two older sisters that are 7 and 8 years older than me and a younger sister that is 9 years younger than me. So like.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, my mother had that experience and then was like, sure, let's do it.
I can't believe anyone continues to do it after one, even in a great, if they had a great experience.
I was going to ask you about that, actually. Yeah. Since you've had one and had the experience of it, are you excited to have more? Would you?
No. It was like immediate. Like as soon as I realized I was pregnant, I was like, oh no, what did I do? Like, this is the worst. Like the nausea is so gross. Like everything about it.
Oh God.
Yeah, I looked really pretty. That's all. When I was pregnant, my hair was so shiny.
It's really interesting to hear people's different experiences with being pregnant, because I have friends who like absolutely love being pregnant.
And they should keep doing that. And they should be surrogates. And I mean, I'm glad that those people exist in the world.
Did they really enjoy it? Yeah. Or are they just saying that?
I have a friend who's just, I mean, between my group of college girlfriends, I actually got together with a couple of them this weekend. One of them was in town for business and one of them lives kind of near LAX. And we all like had brunch and it was great. And one of them has a baby who's like so cute. Mm-hmm. We counted how many kids my group of friends has from college, and it's like 15.
Oh my God. Well,
yeah. I'm like the lone, like Mary Tyler Moore holdout, like not having. I mean, there's three of us that don't have kids, but the others all, I think. Three of them have one kid and the others all have multiple children. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we had this big email thread that's been going on since like the year 2003. And, sometimes on that email thread, people will talk about their various experiences with pregnancy and childbirth. And it's really fascinating to see the range of reactions to the same biological process. Like some women are like you, Jane, where they're like, this is so weird. I had a negative experience. It was a struggle. Yeah. And some people are like, it was great. It was beautiful. And most people kind of fall a little bit in between. Yeah. And some of them feel differently about different pregnancies.
Right. Like, yeah. Well, that's the thing that people try to come at you with is like, well, the next one they say is a lot easier. And I'm like, there is no next one. Stop talking about the next one. You know, when you're talking about your friends from home, I have 4 friends who are grandmothers.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I'm a little older than you.
Mine are from college, though. So they're Catholic
college.
Yeah, this is like
high school friends that now have babies who have had babies.
Wow.
Like, my goddaughter had a baby recently.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's a different lifestyle in different parts of the country, for sure. Tian, I wanted to talk to you really quick. We were talking about our parents and their role, our mothers and their role in like talking about sex and sexuality with us. And as a person who is out and gay, how did your mother handle when you came out, and like how did your relationship with her change, if at all?
Ooh, now at this point, I came out probably 7 years ago. Now where it's like better than ever. And every time I come home, I feel like the gay teen who finally gets to be out, because I'm like at home and I feel like, you know how you go home and your parents make you feel like you're a kid again.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I'm like, oh, I'm the gay kid at home. I get to live this life in high school I never got to realize. But that took a little time. I remember when I came out to my mom, it was my mom and my dad. It was at dinner. That morning, my sister, who was not old enough to drink yet, had gotten caught with a bottle of vodka in her room.
You were like, this is my opening.
And I would, I was actually pissed at first because I was like, we can't both disappoint our parents today. This is so messed up. You stole my moment. But I was leaving. It was Thanksgiving. And I think that's another, I think that's a thing that's common within the queer community is people coming out over holidays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because that's like the only time you come. It's when you're together and you're like, here, I'm going to do it. And I just, my first question, my mom's first response when I told her I was gay, which I didn't say in Vietnamese, I actually said everything in Vietnamese, prefaced it, and then said I'm gay in English because the Vietnamese word for gay still feels like a slur. Mm-hmm. So I switched back and forth. And my mom's first response was, so you're like Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh.
Which I was like, thank you, Ellen, for your positive. But then she started asking, like, I feel like there's a lot of questions that parents are immediately like, is that my fault? What did we do? They're like, what did we do wrong? Was it because we let you play soccer? Like, just
was it because I've only ever known your father?
Yeah, mom, actually, yeah. But she had all the questions, but she was very calm. She, like, my mother is a stoic woman and has a very dry sense of humor, and she was just very serious and just was like, didn't have any immediate reaction, wasn't upset. My dad actually got up and walked away from the table. Mm-hmm. And my mom just asked me a line of questions, and I tried to answer them as, like, she'd be like, well, how do you know you're gay? And I'm like, how do you know you're straight? She's like, okay. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I think you're too pretty to be a lesbian. I'm like, straight people are ugly too. Just like, let's have it out, mom.
Yeah.
But now she is like 100 completely, like, supportive. And, like, we'll have moments where when people are being homophobic, she'll just be like, I can't believe it in this day and age. How can you still be like that? And I'm like,
that's my mom.
They love my partner. It's gotten to a really wonderful place now.
That's
fantastic.
Great.
Yeah.
That's excellent mothering.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad you shared that story. And also, I can't believe your mom had a C-section in a refugee camp.
I know.
Yeah. Holy living.
No wonder she's so calm. I mean, I think after going through something like that, nothing could be
she's a very
traumatic. That's amazing.
She's like 4'10".
Oh my
God. She's like
God.
a tiny,
by the way,
petite
as a
woman.
Fellow petite woman, that is something that terrifies me about pregnancy. I'm like, I don't know. Could I even handle it? Do I have the hip width? I don't know. I have tiny ass feet. I don't have honkers like Aaron Ryan.
Oh, man. I think it is now taking a toll. The four pregnancies is taking a toll on her body.
Yeah. That, I mean, it'll
or
happen.
Has and is now.
It's harsh.
Yeah. It'll happen. I mean, I think one thing I wanted to talk about is, I think especially for millennial women, the financial consideration to having a child has never been more front and center. Like, I know people who graduated from college right before the financial collapse. And so then it's like, well, I can't really get my career started. And then it was just one thing after another, after another, after mm-hmm. another, after another. And eventually, you know, now people who are millennials are in their mid-30s. And it's sort of like, you have to make a decision soon-ish, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like depending on your body chemistry and how cooperative you are. If you want to have a kid, you kind of have to do it soon. And mm-hmm. a lot of people are like, you know, they have one kid and they want to have another, but they can't because childcare is too expensive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They want to have one kid, but they aren't sure that they can't afford a house big enough for the kid. And mm-hmm. it's such a can of worms. And I do want to get into it more.
Yeah.
But before we close this conversation, I want to end on a high note. I want to say, what is your favorite thing about your mother? And just like a little thing. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. Like, she's loving. I'll start because I asked the question, so I already have the answer prepared. So one of my favorite things about my mother's a high school principal. She had been an English teacher before that. And before that, she was like a small town journalist. She's always kind of onward and upward, like enriching herself, education, like learning new things. She loves the opera. She's just like very interesting. And I hope that when I'm her age, I'm like her. But one of my favorite little things about her is that she uses like frontier slang to punctuate points she's trying to make. So she'll say things like, well, what the Sam Hill is the president doing? well, holy buckets. And it's like, Mom, where did you learn that? Like, this is not the prairie.
Holy buckets.
Yeah, what the Sam Hill is definitely my momism. And it's like one of my favorite things about her when she uses this like old timey, like avoiding swearing. It's like, you know that I say fuck into a microphone for a living. Right? You don't have to like avoid swearing. It's totally fine. So that's my favorite thing. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. My mom is one of my, if not my absolute best friend. We're very close. We talk multiple times a day. We text all the time. She is super supportive. She's vulnerable, too. So she's not unwilling to share with me when she feels sad or when she feels depressed or when she feels anxious. And I love that about her. But the little thing I think that I like most about her, she cares a lot about how she looks. Like, she's really gone all out. Like, she's going to hate me for saying this. I can't say it. She's done some things. She just takes care of herself, is what I'll say.
Does she have, like, an array of nail polish colors?
Oh, yeah. She always gets her nails done. She constantly gets her hair done. She constantly is, like, into new fashion and bags and earrings. She's always giving me new jewelry. She's the definition of aging gracefully, and it's something that I really take a cue from. In fact, my favorite mother outside of my own is Morticia Addams, and part of it is because Morticia remains this, like, very graceful and sexy woman, regardless of how old she is. And I love that it's not about age, but it's about this sort of internal dignity that becomes externalized depending on who the woman is. So I would say that's a little thing that my mom does. That I love that too.
I can go.
Okay, go ahead.
My favorite thing about my mom is that every now and then, now that I live closer, she doesn't do it as much, but she writes me letters.
Oh.
I'm so bad, I never write back. I just give them back. But she will write me letters, and all the letters are, like, decorated like crazy with a ton of stickers.
Oh.
And stickers from when we were kids that she saves everything. And so she'll just, like, I will get letters and it'll be stickers from, like, when I had stickers as, like, a first and second grader.
Oh.
And I have all of them.
That's great.
Yeah, precious. That's my favorite thing.
Great. All right, Jen Marie, go last.
I love everything about my mom. I love my mom so much. Now, whenever we go to visit, she lives in Michigan, so it's always, you know, it's a couple times a year that we try to go visit, and she'll start calling me. This is, like, so cute, and I think many people would find it annoying, and she won't mind that I say that. But about a month before the trip, she'll start calling, like, I'm going into town. So what do you guys need? I'm just going to get the house stocked for you girls. And I'm like, so this is the non-perishable call. And then next week will be like, is there any, you know, mittens or gloves I can pick up at the tag sale? And then the next week, then we get to perishable items.
Yeah.
And by the time we get there, the whole house is, like, full of, like, whatever food we need. But it's like her project for a month.
It's really so cute.
Really
I love that. I love all of your moms. They all sound
great. I love all your moms.
Great.
Yeah, likewise.
All right, we have to take a break, but when we come back, a very special Mother's Day edition of The Hills Will Die On.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, we're back. Jane Marie, Grace, and Tien are still with me, and this is a part of the show where we take adamant stances on issues that don't really matter, The Hills Will Die On. Hmm. This week, we have a very special edition of The Hills Will Die On. Rather than us personally giving hills that will die on, we had our moms call in and leave 30-second voice memos, and we are going to respond to the mothers of some of your favorite Hysteria crew, the women that are here right now, and then we also have a couple who are not here. So let's get started.
I'm Peggy, and I'm a listener from Wisconsin, and I'm Aaron's mom. The hill that I would die on is, fellas, take off your hat when you enter a building, because unless you're into high fashion and the hat really makes the outfit, there's no reason to be wearing it. Once you enter a building, there's no snow, rain, wind, or sun. The hat has no purpose. Take it off. I've seen hats covered in grease, mud, and sweat stay atop menfolk's heads at the dinner table. These are facts. The hat's not the men. are likely disease-ridden breeding grounds for insects. Disgusting. Take it off. I've seen men donning such specimens while chairing public meetings. They take the hat off to say the Pledge of Allegiance and then put it back on. Stunning, really. The reasons for removing that gross baseball cap from your head involve manners, protocol, and civility. And mostly, you should take it off because your mother said so. That's the hill I'll die on. Happy Mother's Day.
What in the Sam Hill?
Yeah.
I love it. I agree with her, by the way.
I agree with her.
I disagree with her. There's a man wearing a hat in the room right now who is he is beet red with shame.
Yeah.
I can picture exactly the kind of hat she's talking about. It's usually like a snowmobile branded hat.
Oh, yeah. That's a Michigan thing.
Or Wisconsin. If your state touches a Great Lake, you have an epidemic of these hats.
Are gross, and you can see the salt, salt line on the front.
Yeah,
you know, that's not good. But if it's a clean hat and it's sharp looking.
I'm down with a cool hat because sometimes I wear what I think is a cool hat indoors.
My partner wears a hat 100% of the time. Sometimes, like right before bed, he'll take it off.
Wow.
He's so cute.
All right, let's go to the next mom.
Yeah, không có chịu không stand được là xong. Ai đi ra cửa mà đẩy cửa đóng cái rầm. I hate it, I don't know why. Nếu mà cái cửa mà đi ra đóng cái rầm là ghét lắm. Tại sao phải đóng cái rầm vậy? Đóng nhẹ nhàng được, right? Tại sao đi ra làm cái rầm? Just make me mad.
Mom, does anyone in our family slam doors?
What do you think? Your dad? You always slam door. Oh my gosh. Mở cửa đóng cái rầm. Just make me so...
I was like, Mom, do whatever. Like, my mom is fluent in English and Vietnamese, but I think when you do hills, you're most passionate in your first language.
Of course.
And so that's her. She was just kind of being like, the thing that bothers me the most is when people just slam doors like a rum. Rum is like an onomatopoeia in Vietnamese that just is like the sound of a door slamming.
Yeah.
And she just is like, why can't you just walk out of a door and close it gently? What's wrong with you? And of course, my dad is the biggest offender of door slamming.
You know what? I agree with that hill completely. Car door slamming, too.
I think my mom's worst nightmare is being like in a hotel with a bunch of people that are just slamming
that
the door.
That is also my worst nightmare. I hate it.
It sounds very spooky.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll die on that hill with your mom, too.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next mom.
Hello. This is Mary Para, Gracie's mom. And the hill that I'll die on is, oh, my goodness, that not everyone should have children. It's like, I'll say this, okay? I like more the theory of school's out, but the playground's opened. So it's like, why would you want to have a baby with so much trouble? You know, they cry all the time, and have you ever tried to change a diaper? Anyway, to all of you breastfeeding mommies out there, Happy Mother's Day.
Oh, my God.
Mary.
Oh, my God. Grace, your mom is like, I regret having
this. Yeah.
I'll die on his Grace was a mistake.
She's not the first time that she has said this before. She truly is like, Grace, don't have children. They're not worth it. But, Mom, they're not worth it.
Do you have siblings?
I have three brothers.
That's right.
There's four of us.
She's an expert. She's done her research.
I'm listening to your mom's advice.
I could see the twinkle in her eye as she was saying that. Like, I feel like she's trolling.
Oh, she is a little bit.
In a expert way.
I think she's trolling hysteria for sure. School's out, but the playground is open also. Jesus, so sexual, Mom.
Oh, boy. Okay, let's move on to the next mom.
Hello, this is Karen, Jane Marie's mom. In the hill I would die on would be as a mother, as your children are learning to toddle and walk and have minor scrapes and bumps and bruises, for you to resist jumping up and rushing to their aid, if at all possible. Certainly not with anything terrible happening, but the minor bumps and bruises. And let that child learn to pick themselves up, come over and show you. what has happened and to help you decide what to do about it. And they will gain confidence and ownership of their bodies and be much better for it. And that's the hill I would die on. Oh. Happy Mother's Day.
I love that.
A very sensible mom hill.
Yeah, that is.
Until I heard that, I always thought that what she was doing when I was a kid was like making me explain what happened so that they wouldn't miss any major injury or something, like a head bump or whatever. Like, here's where I got hurt. See, it's right here. And then I can start crying and freaking out and clinging to her. But now I realize that it was much more involved than that.
Yeah, it's like you already took the test and your mom is like, here's the answer.
Right.
That's a great one. We have one text Hill will die on. This is from, Alyssa submitted a hill about her mom. Okay. Mm. Alyssa wants us to include the hill about her mom. The hill that I will die on is that no mother is better at homemade bangs than Lydia Mastromonaco. I love the name Lydia Mastromonaco, by the way.
That is a really good international name.
International spy name, international bang making expert.
Yeah.
Lydia Mastromonaco, thank you for making Alyssa. And we have one more mom hill to die on. This one is somebody that's not on the show today, but somebody who you will definitely recognize.
Okay.
Mom, what is a hill that you would die on?
Well, the hill that I would die on is that I'm sick and tired of people telling me what I can't or shouldn't or dare not do. Mm-hmm. Yes. Just because I have white hair, people say, you can't travel alone. You can't eat in a restaurant by yourself. You can't lift that. Mm-hmm. So,
who says that?
People, strangers, children, everybody.
Children come up to you and tell you can't eat in a restaurant alone.
No, it's Uncle Izzy. That's what he told me.
But Mom,
yes.
Seriously, who tells you that?
What?
That you can't do these things.
People, voices.
In your head or in
no,
the world?
No, real people, real people. When I said I was going to France for 2 months with my dog, people said, how can you do that? I said, I'm going to do it. It's my chance to do that. I'm going to do it.
And you did it.
And I did it. But, there were people who were too timid to try anything. Mm-hmm. And that bugs me. They say, I couldn't do that. I say, yes, you could. You just didn't try.
Right. Okay, thanks, Mom.
Oh,
I love that.
That's a hysteria regular, Michaela Watkins, and her mom, who took her dog to France.
I know.
Damn. When she asked with incredulity if a child actually walked up and said, kids say really horrible things. I don't doubt it at all that some small monster was just like, what are you doing here by yourself?
Oh, man. I had a woman I know was telling a story about her daughter telling a woman in a hot tub that she was big.
Oh,
no way.
Little kids say bad things to people.
My nephew once asked a man if he was pregnant.
Which
the man was like, no, but...
Good question.
Very progressive.
Yeah.
Very progressive, recognizing the fact that...
Different bodies.
People who present differently publicly can be pregnant. You don't have to publicly identify as a woman to be pregnant. So trans men can be pregnant.
Also, maybe there's an Arnold Schwarzenegger, a movie fan. Mr. Mom, is that what a movie was called?
Junior.
Why do I know that?
Oh, no.
Why do I?
You were so quick on it, too.
You were.
I don't know. I think I just remembered it being a poster on the wall of the movie rental store in my town.
Ah, yeah.
And it was like faded from the sun, but I have it just burned into my memory. Okay. Jane Marie, Grace, Tien, thank you so much for coming today. This was so fun. Thanks to all the moms who left us hills to die on. And thanks to Alyssa Mastromonaco for calling in to cover the news. And thanks to all of you for listening. There will be more hysteria for you next week. These girls gonna fan it, 1-2-K email and scan it. Don't take no for an answer. Girl with a mouth that's overdone. Right, cause girls just wanna have fun. So Annie, get your gun. Give them what they want, it will never be enough. You can take what you want from me. Yeah, I'll say it loud and we're gonna shut it down. All the girls to the front with me. Girls to the front. Thank you.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription-exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothed.
Dan is very busy, clothed only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.